Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. On this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I'm joined again by Matt Truex. What's up, Matt?
Nothing much, Zach. How are you?
Good, man. Good. You know, I say your last name really fast because I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce it. I'm like, Truex. Yeah. So is it Truex? Truex? How would you say it?
Actually, the correct pronunciation is Truex, so great job. Most people say Truex.
Okay.
Like Truex. And it's French, and that's not the right way to pronounce it, but it is when you're raised in New Jersey. So there you go.
I have a pronunciation problem I've discovered. I pronounced Al Goff. Gal for a while. And,
right.
I discovered in the last episode, Accelerate. It's apparently Accelerate. So I thought, well, here's the deal. I was thinking to myself, okay, the title Accelerate doesn't make much sense with this particular episode. They must mean Accelerate. Like something is an Accelerate, right?
Okay.
But that's not a word. It's Accelerant. There's an N in
accelerant,
there.
Accelerant, yeah.
There's an N in there, which I was unaware of. So the whole last episode, I'm like, yeah, accelerate. Because I thought I was very clever. I'm like, oh, people have been calling this Accelerate, but I'm smart. I figured it out.
The last one I listened to was the Christopher Reeve episode. Now I have to listen to the Accelerate or Accelerant.
See, now you're going to do it too. But anyway, pronunciation is not my forte, so to speak.
That's
so,
all right.
We're going to be talking about Calling today, which is an excellent episode.
Yeah, we are.
This is season two of Smallville. We're on a great run of episodes here at the end. It's a two-part season finale. Before we get into the episode discussion, the day we're recording this, we actually have some sad news, guys. Adam West has passed away at 88 years old, and that's tough, man, because he is the most iconic Batman of all time. Say, you know, make your list,
sure.
Say your Keatons and your Afflecks and your Bales, but iconic, it's Adam West. And I think, you know, anyone around our age, even though we were obviously younger than, too young to see Batman 66 on the air when it was on the air and first run, like, that show just became such a pop culture icon and a touchstone for everything Batman and superhero. Because, you know, when we were younger,
yep.
there weren't seven shows on TV, you know, about superheroes anymore.
No.
It's just like every night of the week.
I don't know about you, but I grew up watching reruns of Adam West, and like we had the movie on VHS that I watched over and over and over again. You know, like I loved it, and I loved the car, and the whole aesthetic of that show was just beautiful. And then he was amazing on top of it. You know, like still his performance in that show and the movie and all of it was just, you know, it's easy to write it off as camp and silly, but like that's an actor who knows what he's doing.
Right.
He knows the show he's in and what he's supposed to be delivering. And he does it every single time. It's kind of nuts.
He's incredibly self-aware. You know,
yes.
and that's why you can laugh with him instead of laughing at it. Because it's like when you're a kid, you go through phases of Batman 66, right? When you're a kid, you take it completely, it's face value.
Yep.
Like, this is amazing.
Yep.
This is amazing. Batman fighting the Joker, the Penguin, the Riddler. Oh, it's so good, you know. And then you get a little older, you get a little cynical, maybe like a teenager, you know, early 20s. You're like, man, this show's garbage. What is this? You know?
Keaton's my world. I love Keaton.
And then you get a little older and you're like, oh man, Adam West is brilliant. Like the show's approach, it's so self-aware and you can laugh with it, like I said. And that's what kind of elevates it above the veneer of camp on the
yes.
surface, right?
It's also like it's a good kind of litmus test when you meet someone who says they're a fan and like, you know, 66 comes up. And they're like, oh, well, that garbage was just like, oh, okay, you, if you're starting off like that already, you really don't understand what that show was. Because
right.
it doesn't betray the character in any way.
No, it's probably the most accurate representation of Batman
Absolutely.
Comics ever, right?
Absolutely. To the point where the pilot is just a Riddler story that that Bill Finger wrote in the comics. Like, it's literally just translated. Uh-huh. That's the only time they ever did that. But it's like, you can't say that this is far from the source material when that, like, all that dialogue, all that plot comes directly from it, you know?
Right. So, yeah.
It's so silly.
For you know, all the talk we do about Smallville here, all the CW shows right now, you know, if you guys have never checked out Batman 66, I would highly recommend it. There was a long-term, well, long overdue, well, basically, it didn't come out on home video. What I'm trying to say is it didn't come out on home video until, like, 2-3 years ago, which is
yeah.
absurd. Okay,
but
the 50th anniversary, they finally got their act together and released
it. They did it I don't know if you have it, but it's perfect. It looks beautiful. The special features are great. Uh-huh. It, like, I know we had to wait forever, but at least when we waited forever, it wasn't a subpar product. It was like, oh, okay. Yes, right. Thank you. This is literally what we've been asking for years. So good.
Because I remember there was a video store in town. It used to be called Audio Video Plus, and it was the video store. They had laser discs, so you knew they were legit, you know. and my dad and I were like, yeah, let's go rent some Batman, because I'd seen the movie, I'd seen reruns on TV. But like, yeah, let's go see some of that. And we went down there, we're like, yeah, so you have Batman? They're like, no, that's not on video. We're like, excuse me? It's like, it was shocking. And then, you know, we just go, oh, okay, yeah, right. It's a rights thing,
I said,
and all that.
Batman. You must have Batman.
Yeah.
Right?
You're telling me you have that weird 70s Spider-Man show on tape, but you don't have, right, Batman? Are you kidding me? But anyway, I am really happy that Adam West won. Look, 88 years old, a good run. Nothing to complain about there.
Oh, absolutely. And also, like, had some trauma in his life, like was a debilitating alcoholic for a while, you know, and turned his life around because he wanted to for his family.
Yeah, I mean, talk about typecasting, right? After Batman 66,
oh, yeah,
nobody
sure.
would, like, oh, well, it's Batman. Nobody's going to take you seriously. Right. And he was doing, like, carnivals and car shows. You can see all the pictures of the 70s.
Oh,
him and Burt Ward
shot him
going
out of
around.
Cannon at one point.
Yeah, hey, guy's got bills to pay, right? He did what he had to do. But, yeah, I mean, he went down pretty far, and he routes back up. So I'm happy that he got to see, you know, a resurgence of his career. A lot of it probably thanks to Family Guy. Seth MacFarlane casting was Mayor Adam West, which is brilliant, right?
Yep. You know, say what you want about Family Guy or about Seth, but absolutely, that's a big part of it. You know, all of a sudden there's an Adam West action figure in the Family Guy toy section. You know, it's just
exactly.
So strange.
And then there was that, and then he got to see fandom, like, come back around to Batman 66 because, you know, with the Tim Burton movies and then the Christopher Nolan movies, you know, people are like, oh, this is how Batman should be, you know?
Yeah.
But I think now that there's been so much media and everything for Batman related, that there's plenty of room for plenty of interpretations of Batman, and fans have kind of re-embraced. And, you know, Kevin Smith loves Batman 66, right? And he's like,
he is
celebrity Batman fan, right?
Well, like, after I got through my little morning moment this morning, by the way, I found out about this like 10 minutes before we started. So I'm a giant Batman fan, and I love Adam West. It's just like, I'm really raw right now. But after I got through like my first little bout of like, oh God, this sucks. My first thought went to like Ralph Garman of like, oh no, what's he going to do? It's going to make me cry.
Oh yeah.
God. I got to meet him at a convention, and you know, they're all, anybody you meet at a convention, there is a kind of performative element to it, but all the same, like, he was everything you wanted him to be, you know, like, he was just very kind. There was no sense of like, kind of the Shatner, like, get a life thing. not that Shatner has that anymore either, but you know what I mean?
Right.
And it was just like, he was just kind of jokey. The convention I met him at, there was a big, it wasn't everybody, but like a lot of the cast of Buffy was there. So like most of the lines were there.
Oh,
so he was just asking me like, is Buffy herself over there? Like, where's my line? Like, I'm like, I don't know. I'm here. Hi, Batman. You know?
Oh, that's good, man. Yeah, and, you know, he much like, you know, you say Shatner, I equate them, you know, very much.
Absolutely.
So they went through their dark times of like, oh, I'm not this character, you know, get a life, will ya? And then they became self-aware and embraced the fandom and embraced the fans and had a renaissance of, you know, Shatner more so with his Emmy Awards and all that with Boston Legal. But, they were both so full of life, right? It's like, I know they're in their late 80s. But, you know, even now, they were so full of energy and vigor. You didn't, I mean, yeah. I know they were old, but you thought they were just going to keep going forever, right? And Shatner still is.
Did you see that documentary on, like, I think it's like Being Adam West or something
I have not. I think, was it what, Starring Adam West or something
that was it. Yeah. Anyway, well, especially now, I'm sure it's going to be crazy expensive on
Flying
iTunes.
Off
but,
the shelves,
Yeah, it's totally worth it. One of my favorite takeaways was, like, he swims, like, or he swam, oh, God, he swam, like, 3 laps a day or whatever in his giant pool in the backyard, and I'm like, I can't do that now, and I'm 27, you know, like, this 80-whatever-year-old guy is just awesome.
Right, it's,
all right.
But yeah, that's Adam West. To put a button on, I just want to say, you know what? Thanks, Adam West, for all the years of entertainment on and off screen. And again, I'm glad that he lived long enough to see the fandom come back around to Batman 66. He got to see, it come out on home video and be heavily involved in that. You know, that would have been a tragedy if it was still like kind of hung up in red tape, and then it's like, oh, we missed Adam West. Now he can't be a part of it.
The real sucky thing would have been like, oh, he died. I guess we'll push this through now.
Oh, no, like, the worst, right?
Come on.
And then he finally got to reprise the role of Batman in the Return of the Caped Crusaders. Oh
my God.
Animated movie, which was, you know, brilliant, by the way. I loved it. It was a brilliant send-up of the 60s show, faithful, like laughing with it and at it at the same time as that show did. So, when I heard about it, I was like, how are they going to pull this off? But they did a great job, and I loved it. That was like the culmination of this Bat Renaissance for Bat 66. You know, you had the comic books, you had the toys, you got the home video stuff, and Adam West and Burt Ward both got to be a part of all of that. And it just would have felt empty without it. Anyway, literally breaking news as we're recording this, so I know that was a bit of a tangent, guys.
Yeah, I'm sorry, and I'm you know, like, I love Batman, I love Superman, but Batman's always the go-to, so sorry for hijacking there, but, like, oh, man, thank you. I needed to talk that out for a second.
This is a smaller podcast, I think, so
let's
Lois and Clark, let's get on
good
that.
Good for you.
So, we're talking about Calling, the penultimate episode of season 2, and in the Smallville, the official companion, season 2 by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold. Greg Beeman says, Calling is a hard episode. It's like Vortex. Structurally and artistically, it's a very difficult type of episode to write and direct because it doesn't conclude. It's the episode before the finale, so it's all foreplay. There weren't a lot of visual effects or explosions to glide the lily either. But nice reference there, I guess, a metaphor.
Guild, I believe, right?
Guild, yeah, there it is again. Son of a... Guild the Lily, either. But Terrence O'Hara is really our strongest performance director, along with James Marshall, and the episode resonated. And Ken Biller goes on to agree about the quote-unquote structural problems with the episode. The second-to-last episode always tends to be weaker. With this one, there were two very different storylines going on, which felt incongruous in a way. You have all this emotional stuff going on with Clark and the preparations for the wedding, but every time you cut away to Dr. Walden, you feel like you're in a different movie. But there is some really cool stuff. So, you know, they're saying there that they think this is weaker than Exodus. I know Craig and I were talking about season finales in our Supergirl special, and actually, I think Calling is better than Exodus. What about you, Matt?
I agree. There's a reason I asked for there's a couple reasons I asked for this episode, but I think it's really cool. I understand what he's saying with, like, all the Krypton stuff in this episode, I zone out because, like, we'll get to it in the next episode. Like, Jor-El will deal with this. But, I mean, for the drama of it, even for, like, the Lex and, what the hell is your name?
Helen,
oh, duh. all the Lex and Helen stuff, anytime Lionel Luthor's on screen, like, I think it's a great episode.
Absolutely, and I feel like, you know, much like a TV show itself, when you don't know where it's going, you're like, oh, man, yeah, cool. And, and then you get to the payoff, you're like, oh, that's what it amounted to. So, it's a microcosm of the show right here, right? Calling and Exodus. You're like, oh, man, what's going on? He's hearing the voices, and the Krypton is back, and Dr. Walden, and all this stuff. And then
This is all going to be really fulfilling.
Yeah. It's like, oh, okay. No, and Exodus is still a good episode. Don't get me wrong. But I think Calling just set us up so high.
Yes.
It was hard to live up to it. But we'll get into it here. So let's get into the nitty-gritty. Calling.
Dr. Marcus, what was so urgent you needed me here tonight?
It's Dr. Walden. There's been a complete normalization of his higher brain functions.
Considering the source of the trauma, nothing surprises me.
You mean the Kawachi Caves? How does a linguist go into a coma deciphering a Native American language?
If you had that answer, Doctor, you'd be running the place. The day is coming.
So this episode starts out, and we already got a plus one for a hospital visit because we're in the hospital, and Dr. Walden is getting a CAT scan or an MRI or it's his head, so it's a CAT scan, right?
Whatever. Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever. We're not doctors. So he's apparently woken up from his coma that he was left in at the end of Rosetta. Now I do want to point out the doctor character here that the Lex talks to.
Dr. Know-Nothing?
Yeah. He's completely useless, right? But he's Dr. Marcus. Which makes me think of Star Trek, because Dr. Carol Marcus, Dr. David Marcus from Star Trek 2 and Star Trek 3, because, you know, guys, I'm a Trekkie. But anyway, he's played by David Lewis. Now, David Lewis makes another appearance in Smallville as a different character. This happens a lot. by the way, with these character actors.
Really? Yeah, I remember Toy Man specifically. What
was Toy Man in more than one episode?
Toy Man's going to show up in season 3.
Oh, he's the guy. He's the tech guy at like Luther Corp or something. Yes. Oh, I didn't even know.
When there's like the brainwash virus through email or whatever it was. Yeah.
Oh, the 2000s.
Yeah.
but this David Lewis shows up again in season 8's Committed. He's the jeweler that kidnaps Lois and Clark and hooks them up to the the kryptonite lie detector. That's a very Lois and Clark kind of plot, isn't it, Matt?
That makes either Lois or Clark say that, like, I love you to the other one, right?
Yeah.
I half remember it very well, yeah.
Anyway, it is funny when these characters show up. I mean, only people I guess would recognize, like, oh, but that guy shows up again later on. But maybe the doctor thing didn't work out for him after this catastrophic... well, actually, you know what? He probably dies in this episode. I assume Dr. Walden kills all those guys in the ambulance. So anyway.
One would assume, but...
Anyway, so he's called Lex in, and Lex is like, why are you calling me in? You know, it's like, again, these things can be communicated in a phone call, but for the sake of drama, it's like, oh, you need to see this for yourself, right?
But it's like, it's the best way to start a Smallville episode of just Lex walking into a lab angrily, just like, why am I here?
Exactly. It's very Luther. Dr. Walden jolts awake when Lex is talking to this doctor, and he starts quoting one of the most quotable Smallville lines ever, just for the mere fact it's repeated so much. It's, the day is coming. The day is coming. The day is coming. Like when I was starting this podcast, I was teasing like, the day is coming, you know, way back. And I just, that's so...
You said that to me on Facebook when we made a date to do this. Like,
the day is coming. Oh, man, that should be more iconic than it is. I feel like it's not. But it's...
Hulu really missed an opportunity there.
You know? Oh, my God, come on, Hulu. Now, hey, did you see the Hulu trailer... with talking about the specialist in Metropolis?
I was just going to bring it up. I thought it was brilliant.
I'm like, who did this? And I take full credit for it, but they heard the podcast and they're like, oh man, you know, we that's a good point. Yep. We should make a supercut out of that. But anyway,
honestly, all kudos and not to feed your ego, but I saw that and I went, oh, somebody at Hulu listened to the podcast. Like, right on.
You know, if you guys want to give me a free subscription, by the way, because I've been pimping, I pimp Hulu all the time. If you guys haven't noticed on my Twitter feed, whenever anyone says, Smallville needs to be on Netflix. Smallville needs to be on Netflix. I'm like, it's on Hulu.
Yeah, how much easier has your life gotten since then?
Oh, we haven't done this. So much easier. So much. Yeah. Like, I still have the DVDs, but like, I can get screenshots. I can like get little, because whenever I want to make like a smart ass comment about something, I could take a screenshot with the quote in it, you know, on my
so
phone.
So easy now.
It's so portable. It's amazing. Now I love physical media. I like having discs on my shelf, but thanks, Hulu, for Smallville.
Yeah.
So, you know, Dr. Walden, he wakes up, he says this, his eyes are still catatonic, but then he goes back to sleep, and Lex and the doctor are like, huh. Because Lex is like, how is this possible? And doctor's like, oh, I don't know. Like, well, thanks, man.
Later on, too, he has one of my favorite lines of just like, the cataracts faded within a day. How was that possible? It's like, well, it would have been really hard for him to do stunts if it hadn't. So
that's a good point.
We made him take the contacts out. I don't know what to tell you.
You know, then we go to our next scene. It's Clark and Lana in the loft. And, you know, I had a thought about this. Like, okay, so Lana shows up. It's Clark's birthday. She has a secret birthday cake for him, and he kind of takes it oddly because being adopted, and this is an interesting point, you know, and something that only Smallville can delve into about Superman. He's still grappling with the fact that, yeah, he's adopted, he's an alien, so he's like really adopted. You know, Clark is a little, you know, he's a little weird about birthdays and stuff, because as he says in the episode, it's just a random day his parents picked on a calendar. I'm like, oh, that's actually an interesting point.
I know, it's just, like, so the reason I wanted this episode, like, this episode gave me like one of my fantasies as a kid watching it at 12 or 13 or whatever. Like, this Lana scene is perfect. She is so perfect in this scene, and he reacts to it with like a wet fart of, it's not really my birthday. And I'm like, shut up. Like, this is, as far as like clean girl next door stuff, this is so innocent and beautiful and sweet. And like, plus, by the way, I was thinking about this last night, like, as someone now, like, in my 20s who's dating and whatnot, like, he didn't have to do shit. Like, she came to him. He, like, he didn't even put shoes on. This was the perfect night.
That is so true, because, you know, as a guy, you're like, oh, does she does she like me? I know we're talking, like, you know, I mean, we talk a lot, but I talk to other women a lot, and they don't like me. It's like, look, this girl has come over to your barn with a birthday cake in the middle of the night. I think that's a good sign, bro. I think you're, yeah. I think you're in the clear.
And when you react like a child to it, she doesn't run away and say, all right, whatever.
Yeah.
She like has the perfect thing to say to you.
Yes, no, it's true.
It blows my mind.
You know, Lana and Clark, right? I loved it in season one, but then Chloe came into the picture, and I was like all about Chloe and Clark. I'm like, yeah, they're a much better fit, you know? And then Lana had her whole lies and secrets thing all season. That's like Craig, our friend Craig's favorite thing. He's like, look at your lies and secrets. That's his favorite, like, Lana impression, right? And she did get annoying at times, but Clark, I mean, let's look at what Clark did this season. I mean, being on Rare Kryptonite, he really did some inappropriate stuff. And yeah. If I were Lana, I would never speak to him again, right? For the multiple occasions where he, like, blew her off for other women.
For sure.
But, you know, here, like, at the end of season two, they find their footing again with the Clark and Lana relationship. Like, I'm back on board with it, right? And like you said, the scene is so sweet and innocent, and it's a great moment between them. And this is really their first kiss with him not being on Red Kryptonite or her being affected by the Nicodemus fire. So this is a big deal, right?
No magic rocks or flowers here. Yes, you're right. I forgot about that.
Because, you know, I know they love to show in the promos all the stuff going on, but no, guys, let's not forget. This is the first moment they consummate their relationship, so to speak. And
season five will consummate the relationship.
Yeah, exactly. But I do want to talk about that. So the cold open ends, they kiss, we go to the opening credits. One thought. I feel like they could have switched these two scenes in the order. You know, they could have started with Clark and Lana and then cut to Lex and the Doctor, because then you get the whole "the day is coming" and you could go to the Smallville.
I did notice how long that blackout was between like the kissing loveliness scene and then somebody's there. You know? Yeah.
It's like I do wonder sometimes with these episodes if they plan either way. You know, they could like switch these scenes. I feel like at the end of episodes a lot. Like, there could be a really cool Lionel and Lex scene, but instead here we are in the loft with music by Evanescence or something.
Do we want to go out, with Jonathan Clark in the loft, or the, like, oh, we found a thing moment?
We found a thing, exactly. So we go to the open credits, we come back, and here's the deal. In Smallville, we know that Clark did not lose his virginity until season 5 with Lana. They make a big point about it. Like, you and Jason? No. You and Alicia? No. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. By the way, you and Jason? Really? No.
Well, that would have been illegal. I don't know what the laws are in Kansas.
Oh,
but,
good point. But they were living together for months.
Were they living in the top of the Talon together?
Oh, weren't they? I always thought they were.
I don't know. I didn't know where Jason lived. I don't revisit season 4 a lot.
Yeah, you'll be surprised to hear season 4 is somewhat of a blur for me. So I don't know.
No pun intended. The blur. Anyway. I had to. So... Clark comes downstairs, he's like, hey, Mom, hey, what's going on? And she's like, how was last night? He's like, oh, Mom, are you prying? Like, okay, look, this is everything, everything about this says Clark got some last night, right?
Yes, I mean, everything, especially the Chloe line later of like, oh, that's what you were doing till 2 last night.
Yes.
Like, I know it's high school. I know it's high school. Nobody just makes out till 2. There was at least some good touching. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, so it reminds me of Red. When he's on the Red Kryptonite and he spends a night out with Jesse or whatever, and then he comes back to the farm like, where were you? He's like, oh, last night was the best night of my life. Again, you know, outside of the context of what we know about Clark and Smallville and Superman and all that, you'd be like, oh, yeah, well, that happened, you know, last
he got
night.
Laid, but yeah.
Yeah, but that's not...
His thing was like, we played evil charades and it was great.
Yeah, evil charades, so good. Jonathan comes in. He's like, oh, look what the cat dragged in. It's Lex Luthor, this guy that I'm going to be standing for his dad at his wedding, but I still think he's a horrible person.
Why does Jonathan do this in this episode? He's so bipolar the way he treats Lex, and it's very strange.
It's like they were reading like the character sheet from like season 1 instead of like mid-season 2. Like, but... Jonathan does not trust the Luthers and wants Lex out of his family's life. And then it's like, Jonathan respects Lex and considers him an adopted son.
And like shakes his hand and does the like, Lex, we'd be honored. You know, like...
Yeah, that's...
Is he like this all this past season, too?
Well, he's back and forth, because it was the whole stuff with Martha working for Lionel, and then... At this point, it's always like two steps forward, one step back with Jonathan and Lex. And, like, well, I guess, like, everything in Smallville, right?
Sometimes in the same episode.
That's because this episode, just more than anything, again, it's the microcosm of the greater show, because we have a scene like this where Lex, you know, he comes in, he's like, well, my parents can't be in my wedding. Well... Your dad could be. You just choose for him not to be. But he's like, could you guys sit in for them? And, you know, they both look at John, because Clark and Martha would be all about it. They both look at Jonathan. He's like, we would be honored. I'm like, okay, that's a little strong. Like, a little, like, tone it back a little bit. Maybe we can balance out the soul. I hope you know who you're marrying, Helen, because, you know, exactly. He does later in the episode.
And he gets him, like, the very thoughtful gift, and it's all strange. It's just, pick a lane, John.
Family, pick a lane, exactly. He gives him the family heirloom. I think it's the next episode he does that.
Yes!
But they kind of blur together. But, you know, Helen even brings this up later, because Lex tells Helen, hey, save a couple seats for my parents. They're going to be the Kents at the rehearsal dinner. And Helen's like, you know, that's great that you want the Kents to be involved, but maybe you should reach out to your own father. It's like, look, I know you want to be part of the Kents family, but this is, you're taking it too far. And I feel like this is him taking it too far. But I get why. I mean, it's Lex Luthor. His obsession right now is Kents, is the Kents and Clark and all this stuff. So anyway, it's
but
just
she's like, I'm about to marry into this very rich family. I can't have him hanging out with all these farmers all the time. It's like bad. I really need.
It's bad optics.
Yeah, I need Dad to be involved.
Speaking of, what is up with Helen's family? Like, they don't show up. I know that, like...
I don't know.
You know, all these characters, like... Again, like, Chloe's parents, Helen's parents, like... I know there's a lot of parents to keep track of, but when you do major family things like weddings, maybe we should cast someone as their parents and have them show
just
up.
Just throw them in the... Like, they don't even have to talk. Just literally put them in the background.
Exactly.
We're fine.
So, next scene, we go to the Talon, and Lana is doing calligraphy and all these events for the wedding, and again, so Chloe is like, oh, well, what were you, like you said, like, what is this what you were doing till 2 a.m. last night? And Lana's like, yeah, that's it. It's like, but, and she mentions that she's not invited to the wedding, which I find very odd, because Gabe Sullivan works for Lex Luthor at Luthor Corp,
right. And
or
Gabe's
Lex
part
Corp.
Of or was part of Lex Corp.
So, oh, there's a Lex Corp sighting in this episode. I'm very excited to bring it up later.
Wait, I just watched this last night. We're, okay,
I know.
We'll get there.
I'm gonna blow your mind, Matt. It's all right.
All right.
I never saw that until when I rewatched it this time, just because I'm watching for details like this.
Of course.
But yeah, Gabe worked for Luthor Corp and Lex Corp, and like, you think he would at least be invited, and therefore Chloe would be invited, but they have to do this. Chloe's not because, okay, remember Heat, the first time Lex got married? Chloe went to that wedding. Why would she not go to this wedding? Right? Think about
She'll be
it.
At the next one too,
yeah.
Right?
Next one in a big way.
Yeah.
Conflict of interest much, but anyway, the plotting here is like, oh, Chloe is on the outside here, and Clark and Leonard are in this side. So that's what it's all about. But then, if there could not be worse timing, Clark shows up and he's like, oh, hey, Lana, I need a double cappuccino, please. It's been a long night.
By the way, real quick thing, he says espresso with an X. He orders an espresso, and I'm like, dear man.
That is something I would do, because I clearly cannot speak, and I pronounce things wrong, so I totally relate to God. Just another thing I have in common with Clark, right?
It also just struck me, kind of, like, I'm sure it was just Tom mispronouncing it, but it was also, like, it was kind of cute in high school of, like, he thinks he's being an adult.
Like,
look
an
at him.
Espresso,
him.
Please?
Yeah, I'd like
on the rocks, hold the salt.
Right, exactly.
Through this exchange here, Chloe can kind of figure out what's been going on. It's like, oh, I see. But then Pete shows up, good old reliable Pete, to break the tension. He's like, hey, Chloe, you ready to go? And then everybody just kind of awkwardly stares at each other for a while. And it's pretty humorous. And Pete's like, is everybody okay? You know, I literally laughed out loud at this because I love Pete. I can always rely on him to break the tension in that way.
And then before Chloe leaves that scene, she references like this fairy tale joke she'd made earlier. It takes a darker turn, and she made it like forever ago when just Lana was there. So when she makes it again, like even I as the audience watching it, I'm like, wait, no one remembers what you're talking about. Come back in and explain that real quick.
Yeah, it's like evil stepsister because, you know, as we know, Lana is now part of Chloe's family tree. So and it's like, I'm going to undermine my evil stepsister. What?
The only way for Clark or Pete to react to that is just to turn to Lana and be like, what was that? I'd also like to point out, and like Tom Welling, usually very good looking guy, he's got really stupid high school hair in the scene. It's just really flat and like almost bowl cut on his head. It's very strange.
So Chloe's not the only one with a season 2 hair problem. What are your thoughts on Chloe's hair in season 2, Matt?
You know, it was of the time. I will always be in love with Lana Lang, but Chloe was just as cute back then. And I had no complaints about it at the time, so I can't complain about it now.
So, Chloe and Pete leave, Lana and Clark, have a bit of a moment, they're like, oh, you didn't tell her? Like, no. And then, basically, Lana starts to kind of back off from what happened, And, you know, Lex has a good analysis of it later on, too. He's like, oh, you know, you put all your chips on the table. The stakes are high. Like, I love these early episodes of Smallville where Lex is, like, giving Clark relationship advice, you know?
Where Clark treats Lex like he's Sam Malone and just, like, there to know everything about women.
Exactly. Which is, again, Lex giving Clark all this advice about women, especially Lana, is very uncomfortable.
Very strange.
And when it comes to later seasons. But yeah, I mean, you would say, like, oh, this is just Lana being Lana. Like, no, actually, this is a very, like, human thing. Like, you know, you go, you know,
sure.
You go 90, she goes 10, but then she takes back the 10 back, you know?
So and also very high school of just, like, no one over 16 has ever said, I'm just worried about our friendship, you know? Like, if you're an adult, you try it, and then you just go back to being friends if it doesn't work out, you know? Like,
and that's why all the, like, the drama in the Smallville, it's acceptable, because remember, these kids are teenagers. This isn't like Arrow, where everyone's, like, 30 years old. These are teenagers.
I forget what it was, but we'll get to it, I'm sure, in my notes. But there was a moment later on where I'm like, oh, yeah, I forgot that they're children.
Yeah.
That they're
they don't look like children. Years old. But they don't let the appearances can be deceiving. That, you know, that's another thing about Clark's birthday being like random. Like, that's why he looks so much older. They didn't know how old he was. Yeah. And, you know, there's so many ways to justify why Tom Welling clearly looks 30 years old when he's in high school. Yeah, so our next scene is at the hospital. This is not a hospital visit. Whenever, like, Helen is there, I don't count it, because that would be ridiculous. No. It's like
this is literally a lunch date.
Yeah. So they're planning the seating arrangements, and Lex is like, oh, you should be work for the UN with all this, you know, drama you're coordinating, because it's like, oh, the red is for family that don't talk, the yellow are buffer zones, and it's a cute, like, kind of wedding planning thing, I thought. And this is where Lex drops, hey, save a couple of seats for the kids. They're going to sit there for my parents. And Helen's like, I don't know, Lex, would this not be a good time to reach out to your father? And he's like, look, it's not going to happen. It's not happening. Okay, so.
Right. Have you met the man? No.
Yeah. Now he goes on to become Lex's best man at his next wedding. So, hey, times change, right?
God. Blowing my mind, man.
Oh, man. So they're having this conversation in the hallway, and then they go into Helen's office, and it has been ransacked. Although I always find it amusing when offices have been ransacked. If you look at, like, the wide shot, there's, like, a crooked, like, like, picture on the wall. Like, why is that?
Everything that's hung is slightly askew.
It's like that slight little touch, you know. Yep. So
something evil's happened.
Yeah, something is afoot. So she's looking around, and she sees her refrigerator is broken into, and the contents have been stolen. And what's in there? We don't know what's in there yet. Sharp-eyed viewers would probably be like, oh, no, did you still have Clark's blood? I don't even know what I thought the first time I watched it. I don't know if I remembered that was still there. I think my reaction would be much like Jonathan, like, why do you even still have that, right? Yeah.
That was such a weird way they started that scene. But that's a good question. I was 12 or 13. I have no idea if I got it or not. But they'll explain it to us in the next
The next scene, we cut the commercial, we cut back, and Jonathan's, like, getting off a tractor. He's like, oh, I'm sorry to hear about that, Helen, but what's that have to do with me?
Right, as if she came over just for sympathy. Like, Jonathan, look alive.
But, you know, this episode with Helen, like, she gets a lot of scenes with characters she doesn't ordinarily get a lot of scenes with.
That's a good point.
So it's nice to see these characters cross-pollinate the plots, right?
Sure.
Because usually it's like, oh, here's the Lex and Helen subplot, and she's talking to Lex, and she's, you know, that's it. And maybe her crazy ex-boyfriend, but other than that, that's all. It's interesting twisted, because she says, well, the vial of Clark's blood was in there, and it's been stolen. And, you know, he's all mad about it. And I would be the same. Like, why do you still have that? And she's like, well, I didn't know if he'd get sick again. I don't know. I don't know what her intentions are. I'm sure the writers don't even know, because I feel like they did a complete 180 with Helen, and it casts all this in a very vague light. But
very strange, yeah.
But she actually accuses Jonathan of doing it, which I thought was an interesting twist, huh?
Yeah, I liked that, though. Like, especially for the... I mean, again, I think that scene just starts weirdly. Like, Jonathan should be on that right away. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I do like that she immediately goes to him, because it makes sense, you know?
Yeah, because no one else would have known about it.
Of course.
But maybe Lex knew about it. I'm not sure how he finds out.
Yeah, why? There's these questions for the show that I really don't concern myself with.
Yeah.
But when we're sitting here and you and I are talking about it as in-depth as we are, I just do get into the, like, yeah, why did he ransack the office? What was the tip that he... you know, thought she would have something weird in there.
Well, he got, as we find out, as she's digging around in his files later, he has the medical file from Martha Kent, which we saw him get at the end of Fever.
Right.
But that shouldn't have anything about Clark's blood in it. So he should not know the significance of it. And yeah, spoilers, Lex stole the blood. And he does a great job feigning this whole episode. Like, oh my God, who could have done this?
He does, yeah.
So that just shows the genesis of the Lex that for the future, right? Who just lied to your face and not miss a beat.
Which is all my favorite parts of the show, just the slow burn of him.
Exactly.
You know, it's great.
The road to darkness is a journey, not a light switch.
Nicely done.
So this is, we cut back to Luther Mansion, and Clark is asking Lex for female advice. And
yes.
It's just
yeah,
so
this
good,
is the
right?
Sam Malone scene, yeah. Right? This is, like, Lex says words like the fairer sex and captivating, and I'm just puking in my mouth as he's doing it.
He's not wrong. His analysis is pretty spot on about pretty much any
it's
relationship.
The way he says it.
If you've ever found yourself in a situation, Lex explains it, you know? Oh, man. But he's rooting him on because Clark's his boy, you know? And Clark's like, oh, no, I care about her so much. And he's like, well, don't tell me, Clark. Go tell her.
I just know we're meant to be together.
Yeah, that is one that I took a couple screenshots of that I might save because it's like, listen, guys, a life lesson. You know, I know we're big on life lessons here at Always On the Smallville, right? Mm-hmm. Don't confuse your Lana for your Lois, okay? Because for the first
great point.
7.5 years of this show, Clark is convinced that this girl he's liked since he was 5 years old, as he mentions earlier, like, she's like, when you give him the birthday cake, she's like, make a wish. He's like, I don't have to. My wish is here. I've been wishing for it since I was 5 years old. I'm like, okay. The fact that she didn't get creeped out and run away is another good sign that you're in, man. Because that is some strong language to be dropping on a girl, you know?
Yeah, but what about their friendship?
Well, in the next scene here, Clark goes to talk to Lana, and she mentions, like, oh, but I'm concerned about the friendship. He's like, the friendship will just evolve.
Right, yeah.
For all the BS we give Smallville about the whole Clark and Lana back and forth, like, I do think they handle it pretty well in this episode.
I do too. It's not crazy. It's high school. It's kids dealing with emotions. It's just what it is.
Now we have a plus one for our episode title set and episode here in a very unexpected place. I did not expect him to say it here. Clark's like, oh, you know, I know things are weird, but that doesn't mean you have to avoid calling me. I was like, oh, there it is.
Oh. All right, as long as you're happy.
Well, I mean, hey, the words in the script. What do you want me to say? But they have a good conversation here, and they don't really come to a conclusion, I guess, because Clark. There's just been whole thing about the whole episode so far. Is Lex is like, hey, Clark, who are you going to bring to the rehearsal dinner, huh?
Oh,
and
right. Yeah, yeah.
Who should I put down for that, right? And it's just so silly that this becomes so important. But Clark. You know, part of his conversation was Lex is like, yeah, I don't know if you should seat Lana next to me at the rehearsal dinner, you know, and it's like, right. Okay, this is what we're talking, this is what we're concerned with, right? But they have, Clark and Lana have this discussion, but they don't really come to a conclusion, because what do we hear? Speaking of calling, we hear Jor-El, and he says, the day is coming. The day is coming.
Is this the first time Terrence Stamp shows up?
Yes. Well, he doesn't. He never shows up. But
you know, excuse me. Yes. Turn of phrase.
Which annoys me, by the way. But yes, this is the first time
they establish him as the voice of Jor-El.
Right. Right. And it's odd. I have, again, this episode is very good. So I'm not going to in a lesser episode I would like rip these plot holes apart. Right. But it's like, why is he hearing Jor-El right now? Like, are the caves and Walden and the key and Jor-El's voice all connected? Like what? What is it? And right now,
if you'd like to explain it to me, go ahead. But I've got nothing.
No.
I have no idea.
You just go with the flow, right? It's like in Rosetta, right? Why does he burn that symbol on the side of the barn, right?
Right.
Like, there's no reason for it. There's
it's
no
awesome.
Plot reason. But it leads him to meet Christopher Reeve, so it's fine.
Right.
Like, I'm not gonna complain about it. And yeah, so you could say, I mean, the way I always saw, like in Superman the movie, for example, right, when the crystal turns on and he goes up to the fortress, you know, and I think Jor-El's like, by now you would have entered your 18th year as measured on Earth or something, right? The way I always justified it, I didn't really think about it watching it again this time, but when I was younger watching the show, the way I justified it is, oh, he's turned 16 or 17 now, and that's the Kryptonian age of ascension or something like that, right?
Right.
So that's
yeah,
where all the stuff is turning
on. And
that
activates the crystal
or the disc.
Or the Kawachi cave, whatever you'd like.
So that's the way I justify it. But
okay.
Anyway, we get a really cool like a helicopter shot of like Clark looking up to the sky and hearing the day is coming, and it's a very Clark Kent moment. He's like, I'm sorry, I have to go. Next scene is we're back at the mental hospital, and Dr. Walden is he's walking around. He's like, the day is coming, the day is coming, the day is coming, the day is coming. And then, you know, that's when we have the cataract exchange. The cataracts are gone.
Yeah, this is the magic
they
cataract.
They faded over the course of the day. I'm like, really? Yeah. I mean, they did. They were able to make that work in Star Trek in the 60s. Some guy to have eyes like that, right? You could Smallville, come on. He looked really cool with the cataracts. He looked like Brainiac, you know? That was the whole point, with like wires in his head. And back then, people were like, oh, man, is he Brainiac? Is he Eradicator? Like, what did you think Dr. Walden was in this episode?
Oh, Matt? There was talk of that back then, too?
Well, on the internet, like the fans were.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. I think it wasn't really until the events of the season 3 finale that I really got into the boards and like Craig's boards and Krypton site and all that. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't really watching it.
What
so too much?
Did you ever post on there?
On Krypton site? Oh, yeah. For sure.
Well, do you remember your name?
Absolutely. Probably it was probably Hawk. Hawke.
Oh, how clever.
Because that was a name I'd stolen from Birds of Prey, and that was when I first started posting on Krypton site, because he had a Birds of Prey site going on too, and then that bled into the Smallville of it all.
Right, that refolded back.
It wasn't until I was very concerned about a character at the end of season 3 that I got online and really got into.
Gotcha.
It.
No spoilers here, although I talk about the series finale on every episode. No spoilers.
But it's best. Like, if someone knew that the series finale was going to be that much of a letdown back then, I would have liked the prep time for the 9 years leading up to it, you know?
Yeah, don't psych yourself up too much, guys.
Yeah, let's not get too excited here.
So Dr. Walden, he's been ranting this whole time, and he stops and he just says, the day is coming. And then his hand pops out. It's so ridiculous, right?
It's so crazy.
He just sticks his hand out. You're like, what is this? It's like, talk to the hand, right? By the way, people hate Terminator 3, and they mention that line in Terminator 3, the talk to the hand line. It's like, that's just garbage. Man, when I saw it the first time, I thought that was the funniest thing I'd ever seen. It's just the T-800, talk to the hand.
It's not that different from Hasta La Vista, you know? It's just... It didn't happen when you were younger.
So right. So good. That's exactly why. So anyway, this energy comes out of his hand, blows open the cell, and then he runs off.
Like cylindrical cell that he's in.
It's a really cool. That's a really cool cell. Oh, see, that's why Lex took him to some of the finest doctors in Metropolis, the specialists in Metropolis.
Found that specialist. Doctor Know Nothing.
We cut the commercial. We cut back, and we see the inside of the cell, and there's these Kryptonian symbols that have been engraved on the wall. And Clark is there with Lex, and Clark's like, "How could he do that?" And he's like, "Well, he can emit some kind of energy from his hands.
He's got powers now."
Yeah, he's basically exactly for no reason. I don't know, because again, if the caves overloaded his mind because he was like not a Kryptonian and they was like a security mechanism. Why would it give him dangerous powers and convince him that Clark must be killed?
Why would it give him real information? Why wouldn't it just scramble him?
Right. So that's, I don't know. It's a mystery, and that's fine. The episode's really good, so I'm going with it. I'm going with it, Smallville.
It's just one of those Smallville mysteries.
So Lex says, I think it says the day is coming. And Clark's like, oh, you know how to read the language? It's like, oh, you slipped up, Clark. You slipped up.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, that's just a guess, because that's what he kept saying. The only thing he kept saying. Clark he plays it well here. He's like, okay, well, thanks for letting me know, but what does this have to do with me? He's like, well, I thought you'd be interested in the caves. He's like, well, hey, man, I don't know how to read the language. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, and he's smartly distancing himself from the situation.
Yes. And this is the start of, I mean, not the start, obviously, but this is the little things that lead to the fracture of the relationship. It's still really cool here.
See,
I love it early on.
This is the stuff that needs to fracture the relationship, not Lana, okay?
Yes.
So Dr. Walden, he has gone to the Kawachi Caves, and he fires his energy into the slot. As you do. And okay, the cave paintings rearrange.
This is
ridiculous. Okay, I draw the line here. I love the episode, but come on, guys, this is BS. Like, I totally buy there's a secret computer behind that wall and all that. But what do you? Why do the cave symbols rearrange like that?
I don't know.
Anyway,
this is an alien civilization, though, that technology is based on crystals, so give it a lot of room.
It wasn't based on crystals until Brian Singer made Superman Returns, and they're like, hey, Smallville, you have to assimilate this. See, because back here, it was like shapes and metallic stuff. You know what? It was cool.
Yeah, you're right.
So
okay, you're right. I'll take it back.
And the eight was an eight. It wasn't the S yet, you know. But
right, yeah.
My world needs hope. Anyway, we cut back to the talent, and this is another scene of Lana and Helen, which I thought in Precipice, I was like, oh, they have a scene together? Is this their only scene together this entire series? Apparently not. They have another one right here. And boy, does it fail the Bechdel test big time. This episode completely fails the Bechdel test because every scene between two women here is talking about a man. So.
Yep. And also, Helen or Lana does the same like UN joke basically that Lex did earlier, which has bothered me.
Yeah. you didn't like that they repeated that?
No, come up with something different. Come on.
They had 44 minutes to fill. Okay, give them a break.
I understand? Just one more pass.
But she does the whole like, if you knew that someone was keeping secrets from you, but only about some things, not the important things, would you still trust them? And it's like, well.
Unless he's just cheating on you a little bit.
Yeah, like, you know, if he really does love me, but if he loves somebody else and just doesn't tell me about that, is that cool? But she does give him some good advice. I don't know. Maybe you tell me, but
I don't know.
Helen tells Lana, like, well, you have to decide for yourself. Is the secrets they're keeping worth, you know, you losing them in your life entirely or what? And she's
that's the type of advice that's like, my answer's in there if you're smart, but if you're an idiot, you won't see it, you know?
Yeah. It's like, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but here's what you should do.
Now, okay, can we, and I know you still have another episode to go this season, so if I'm jumping the gun, tell me to shut up.
We're all about spoilers here, please. I've mentioned this in the interim episodes when there's more and more Helen. I've mentioned her character turn
her
a little
future.
Bit, so yeah.
Okay. Is it just an about face? Is the answer just the writers changed their minds? Or does this make sense?
Well, the original intention was she was going to die after the wedding. It was going
to
be like a, I can only assume it, on Her Majesty's Secret Service kind of thing.
Sure. Okay.
Which would be like, oh, okay, cliche, but at least it would not have undermined the entire character of Helen.
Yeah,
so...
exactly. And then Lex is dealing with this great loss next season. Yeah. I like that better than what happened.
I'm not... I have a growing list of questions that I'm going to ask when I eventually, one day, we'll talk to Alfred Goff, Miles Miller, and I'll be like, hey, what happened to Lucas Luthor? And what was the deal with Helen?
Yep.
You know? these questions that continue to be asked. So after this conversation, we cut back to the Luthor mansion, and Helen is digging around Alexa's stuff. Perhaps this conversation with Lana about trust inspired her to not trust her fiancé.
She really went nowhere for either of them.
It's like it got worse. Two things here. One, I love the... I love the file that she finds. It just says Martha Kent on it, like with a label maker. It's like, come on, Lex. You got to be a little more discreet than that.
That's how hospitals work. Zach, you don't know anything. God.
Why are those not in the secret Clark room? Why are they in
the
library, right? But here it is, folks. She pulls up this envelope, and I missed it the first 100 times I watched this episode, you know, or whatever it was, since 2003. It's a LexCorp envelope. I will take a screen. I have taken a screenshot,
wow.
And I will post it. These are LexCorp files, and that's because I guess it was Lineage. This is the one episode you were on where you see the big door where it opens up
and
says LexCorp.
About it then.
Yeah, and it was like, this is the only time we see this in this show. It's not. We see it again here. So way to go, art department. You got one more in there. And I don't know. Maybe it'll pop up again. But again, LexCorp is still up in the air. I don't know who owns what, where, anything like that. And I assume when Lex, quote unquote, dies or, you know, he's declared dead at the end of the season. Spoilers. See, I don't care. Nobody
cares.
See,
and I went spoilers to the other time he's declared dead. So I'm glad you kind of told me which one we're talking about here.
Exactly. So I would assume Luthor Corp reabsorbed Lex Corp in his absence, and then that's when he comes back. There's just Luthor Corp. It's never spelled out, you know, but that's pretty much happens. But anyway, this is
and then we forget about Luthor Corp literally until the finale, or Lex Corp until the finale.
Yeah, and then it's just because Apocalypse... messed up the sign and there's a big LX. Anyway, Smallville. So she's digging through his stuff, as you do, and Lionel is there, like, whoa. It's kind of a jump scare. And he's like, you don't think he's hit it here, have you? And I'm like, okay, first of all, John Glover's amazing. I like him and everything. How did Lionel get in here, though? And how does he know something was stolen from Helen's office, right?
Just Lionel stuff.
But it's so good, I don't care, right? It's so good, I don't care. And then, again, like I was talking about with Jonathan, Helen gets a scene with Lionel here, right? So she's getting scenes with lots of other characters, which adds some scope to her character as well. So,
which also would make you think like they're not going to destroy this character in a few episodes.
God, they're really building her up. They're spending a lot of time. You know, maybe they'll bump her up to series regular next year.
I bet she's going to get an action figure. Yeah. Like, she's here to stay.
But all these scenes, all this stuff leading up to you know, the wedding and all that with Lionel and Helen, it doesn't seem to be like, it doesn't appear that they're in cahoots, basically. So
no, I agree.
So we go to the cave. Clark is, although he's told Lex, why would you think I'd care about this? You know, I'm not interested in this. Oh, by the way, we didn't miss it because he's still wearing it here, but we have a +1 for our blue shirt, red jacket because Clark is cool. Wearing that. I don't know why he changed into that, to be honest, in this episode. They usually do that for like, okay, it's time to save the day or it's time to meet Christopher Reeve, right? It's iconic stuff. This is just like him walking around. Like you could have saved the pseudo Superman costume for another time. Sure. But he's walking around the caves looking for Dr. Walden, even though he told Lex he wasn't interested. And it's funny. I thought to myself, okay, I thought Lionel took over the caves. Lionel, I'm like, oh, and then he shows up. I'm like, okay, good. Good job, show. You got me on that one. It's a wash with Lionel showing up at Luther Mansion where he shouldn't be. And this also, because Lionel has the caves now, it explains why he's in Smallville more, why he's popping up around. Because you'd be thinking, why is he spending so much time in Smallville? Oh, it's because he has the
caves.
That's
a good point. I just never think of that stuff anymore.
It's my job to think of these things, Matt.
I know. It's good for you.
This is a great scene between Lionel and Clark, who really haven't had many scenes together so far in the series. So it's very interesting when they confront each other, because Lionel is the big bad of Smallville up to this point.
And like this scene couldn't emphasize it more. It's basically scored by Danny Elfman with all these like strings and this ethereal choir going on. And then John Glover's... flashlight work in this scene is really good. Like it's funny, and like I'm not making fun of him. He's such a theatrical actor, you know. Like he is a song and dance stage man, and when he brings those kind of slightly bigger elements to Lionel, it's almost always perfect. It's so good and just spot on tone wise.
Tony Award winning, by the way.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Such
an awesome guy.
That's hilarious you bring up the flashlight. I thought that as well. I'm like, man, he's really having a good time with this flashlight. Because every time he's talking to Clark, he's like, you know, I used to have a disc that fit this slot. You know, it disappeared the same day you and your mother were at my office. And he keeps flashing it in Clark's face. And Clark just literally looks like a deer in the headlights.
Yeah, you'll never believe it. I like to call it the octagonal disc. Yeah. Have you heard it?
Take a shot every time you hear the word octagonal on Smallville, right? And he's looking at it, the painting, right? He's like, they seem to be arranged in a different order. and kudos for him for even figuring that out, right? Then he points the flashlight back at Clark's face, and this might be my favorite line of the episode. Clark's like, it's all Kawachi to me. it's like so stupid. But I bet they were really proud of themselves in the writer's room when they came out with that. Like, yeah, that's good. Anyway, Clark warns Lionel about Dr. Walden. He's like, hey, watch out for him. He could be dangerous. Then he goes on his way, and clearly Lionel has his sights on Clark. He doesn't know, again, all that season 7 retconning and all that stuff, I don't like it. Veritas and all that stuff, that does not track with what we see here. I like him, like, trying to figure stuff out here. And that's
like,
what he's
from now on,
trying to do.
Whenever we do this, my notes for you are always like, does he know? Does this, like, Zach, just tell me this makes sense, please.
No, it doesn't track, I'm sorry. So Clark leaves here. He goes back home, talks to the Kents about it. I mean, he says, hey, ran the Lionel down there. Also, the inscription on the cave wall changed. It says, the day is coming when the last son will begin his quest to rule the planet. Similar to the message in the ship as well. So there are lots of conflicting things here from Jor-El. They never...
Which you and Craig touched on this in the... I never remember episode names. I'm sorry. In the Christopher Reeve episode.
Rosetta, yes.
Well, Rosetta. But I love this addition to the mythology that, like, he was sent there as somewhat of kind of like the first of an invasion, or at least the first of this new ruling class that he was going to make. I think that's so cool.
Yeah, it's a good twist, and then didn't
yeah, it's not
need
necessarily
to undo
like,
it.
I agree. It's not my, you know, like platonic ideal of the Superman story, but as far as adding a new spoke to the wheel, I thought it's totally legitimate.
Yeah, I think, again, it's coming back to Superman Returns, where they're like, hey, we got to work in the Richard Donner movies here. We got to make this synergy here between the TV shows and the movies. Let's get the fortress. Let's get the nice Jor-El that you talk to in the little crystal fortress all the time. And I would have been fine with Jor-El, which is a straight-up kind of bad guy, you know? Or not necessarily bad guy, but misunderstood AI, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, and not always, you know, like, I don't want it, again, in future iterations or whatever, but it would have worked fine here. It would have been that nice, like, truly nature over nurture. Like, he's going to pick good because that's how he was raised.
Exactly. Yeah. Unlike Lex, who, you know, took the other side. It would make the parallels between them even more evident, you know, because you have Lionel over here and Jor-El over here. But, you know, the show runs for 10 years. They got to find story threads, right?
Yes. I'm writing or I'm working on a pitch for this graphic novel idea. And in it, my main character, my superhero, kind of has a little bit of that thing going on where, like, she was made as the first for an invasion and goes against it. So I think part of me writing that was like, yeah, I just want to fulfill that from Smallville. Like, I really liked that idea. Yeah. And then you're right. Like, I love Superman Returns, but it did nothing good for this show at all.
No, did not. Except for letting them have the super suit.
Yes, and letting them have the kind of elements of the Daily Planet, which, like, I love that. Mm-hmm, I love that basement set. I think it's so pretty.
So good. So then we got our next scene at the Luther Mansion. Lex is like, why do you embarrass yourself like this, Dad? It's so funny because he thinks Lionel's there to keep trying to be a part of his wedding. But Lionel's there just to let him know, just to rub it in that Lex's attempts to get conservatorship back of the caves have failed.
Right.
But, you know, what he's really here for is to see Dr. Walden burst in and, you know, tell them that, I read the wall, Lex. He's like, that's great, Dr. Walden. Let's talk about that more when we get you some help, you know?
Yeah, right.
He's trying to talk him down. And he's like, the last son will rule the planet. Don't you get it? It's Clark Kent. And they're like, he's like, we have to kill Clark Kent. It's like, that's such a, they probably didn't use it in the trailer, but it's such a trailer line, right? It's like, we have to kill Clark Kent.
And then Dr. Do-Nothing comes in and actually does something. Takes him out.
In the most inefficient way possible, like with the smallest little dart at his neck.
Yeah.
Like, you need to have, like, whatever they shoot rhinos and stuff with. Tranquilizer, double dart, shotgun, shoot the back or the thigh, not the neck. Yeah. Like, what if he would have missed? He would have hit Lex or Lionel. So
real quick, and I know we're going long already. For anyone who hasn't, I'm sure you have, watched the blooper reel from this season for Rosenbaum and Glover's reaction to all this, like, off-camera reaction stuff they have to do, because they keep laughing the entire time. And I've seen that so many times that just rewatching this for this episode, I was like, oh no, this is that, like, they are both minutes away or, like, seconds away from cracking up.
No, it is funny. I've watched the season 2 blooper reel quite a few times myself, and there's a lot of, from the later in the season, like Accelerate as well, there's a lot of stuff from there. She's like, Clark, do you believe in ghosts? He's like, no.
So right, yeah, he does kind of like a Shaggy voice, yeah. Or like stoner surfer dude.
But yeah, I would laugh too if you know, Rob LaBelle was sticking his hand in my face. Sure, like he was going to shoot me. So we cut to commercial, we come back, and you know, we get a scene with Chloe and Clark in the barn, and he's rehearsing his rehearsal dinner speech about Lex and Helen, because he's the best man, you know, and that's his responsibility. Mm-hmm. So Chloe comes by and she's like, hey, just wanted to tell you, Dr. Walden, they got him. He's back in custody, and, you know, do you guys want to, maybe you want to come back to the Torch and write the story? He's like, yeah, Chloe, that'd be great, but I'm pretty busy right now. And she's like, well, I didn't mean right now. But it's her trying to reconcile the situation, because she sees where it's going, and she's like, look, let's just, you know what, no matter what happens, let's just be honest with each other. And he's like, yeah, let's do that. That's a great idea, Chloe. We won't, but that's a great idea. I feel so bad for Chloe at the end of this season, right?
Me too. But this is another one where, like you were saying earlier, like, it's difficult to write this episode because it's all set up.
Mm-hmm.
They do it really well. Like, all this Chloe feeling rejected stuff, mm-hmm. and then timing it perfectly with, you know, Lionel coming to her right now when she's at her lowest. Like, that stuff is great here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a lot of good planning by Lionel, and then just a lot of luck, because he didn't know all this stuff would be going on right now in Chloe's life.
Right.
You know, I mean, he didn't orchestrate everything, so... And we're at the rehearsal dinner, which, by the way, I don't know where they filmed this, so all credit to the set directors if they filmed it at the Luther Mansion. Maybe they went to an actual location, because I was expecting it to be in that stupid Luther library where we have all of our scenes.
Yeah, that's a good question.
And it looks like a real restaurant. Like,
I didn't watch it close enough. Could it be like a Hall of Justice situation where they kind of changed up the Luther Mansion?
I don't know. I think it's extremely obvious when they use those
sets. Let me pull it up. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, you're right. They went somewhere. Good for them.
So Lex tells Clark, again, Lex being a good friend here, being upfront with Clark, being like, hey, I just want to tell you, Dr. Walden, he was ranting about you. He said you were going to destroy the world. And Clark's like,
right.
Oh, you didn't believe him. He's like, no, of course not. He's crazy. But I just want to let you know that my dad was there, and he's not going to let this go. He's like, oh, well, thanks, Lex. I get Lex being a good friend, right?
He is, but he's also, like, you know, like, he's had his rehearsal dinner for his wedding, and all he can think about is this farm boy. Like, this, it's so Lex Luthor. You know, right. Like, it's just, like, he is obsessed.
Well, it's like in Lois and Clark, right? Where the yes. Season 1 finale, right? I mean, he's marrying Lois, but he keeps Superman in this cage just to go down there mm-hmm. and torture him, you know?
Just to go and, like, sing West Side Story with him and hang out.
So then we cut to Chloe, who's not invited to the wedding, even though she was invited to the first and third Lex Luthor wedding.
As we've established.
Not invited to the second one. She's at the torch, looking at, oh, and I said, oh, Chloe, not this again. Looking at the pictures, looking at the WB press photos from Tempest.
How many times has she taken those out of that recycling bin?
I know, right? Moana's looked at them, she's looked at them, you know.
Did you ever, by the way, like, deal with any of the interactive site stuff that the WB put out back then?
I didn't. I mean, this is 2001. I think we were still paying by the minute to use the internet back then.
Right.
So I didn't spend too much time on the internet. I might dial up internet at home, right?
If you had the code, which I forget where it was, but it was like on the comic or something, mm-hmm. you could sign in as Chloe and use that backdrop, like use that desktop. And they had a recycling bin, and if you opened it, were all those pictures. It was so cool.
That's so good. Things lost to time, right?
Yeah, but it was just one of those. Anymore. Like as a kid, I was like, oh my god, this is awesome, you know?
That's cool. And so Lionel comes in while she's doing this, and she quickly closes it, you know, and opens up some generic email or something. So, and he comes
doing the layout.
Deadlines tomorrow, you know. Again, nobody works at the torch, but whatever. I go on that rant every episode, but you guys know the spiel. Lionel comes in, he tells her that, hey, you know, that column we talked about for the Daily Planet, it's all set. Something from the young person's perspective, a weekly column. And she's like, oh, this is amazing, because this is her dream, you know, and he's giving her dream. And he's
by
like,
the way,
right.
It's huge, like a weekly column for a high school kid.
That is insanity.
The greatest of newspapers ever. Like, that's nuts.
He says, well, I have your first assignment, a complete character background on Clark Kent. And she's like, well, why would the Daily Planet be interested in Clark? He's like, oh, no, it's not for them. This is for me.
Right. She's like, I also love the line of, like, just add it to whatever other information you have on his family already. Yeah. Like, almost he does assume that she's looked into this already.
Well, as she has. You know, I'm sure he did
as
his
she
research
has,
as well. You know, Chloe, being a good friend, she's like, listen, you can shove this offer down your million-dollar pants. I'm not going to betray Clark.
Line.
You know, exactly. That's a good line, too. They, you know, they've been down this road before. Chloe has investigated Clark too far in the past, and she's seen where it's gone.
Right.
So she does probably, you know, if this were years past, she might have thought about it, maybe. But because she's been burned so much and they're already so on the outs as it is, it's like, no, I can't cross this line.
Till the next episode.
Yeah, till the next episode.
obviously it's not played that way, but like, it's threatening. Like him coming to her office late at night, she's just a girl in high school and he's this very powerful and scary man. Like there is a threat to this scene that's really, really powerful, I felt, like watching it back. And also, both of them happen to be really good actors, so they do kind of play it in the subtext there too. I'm not saying anything salacious, like sexual threat or anything, but like, this is a dangerous man and she is a high school girl alone with him. Anything could happen.
Yeah, we talked about in Witness how I love the whole Chloe Lionel dynamic throughout the whole show. They're great actors. They love working together. They've each said that they were like their favorite actor to work with. You can tell it comes through on the screen.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't know that.
Allison Mack loves John Glover. He really respects her as a young actress. So I mean, that was a great, you know, twosome there. And they're not comic book characters, right? So they have a lot of freedom in their portrayal.
That's
and their,
a
you
great
know,
point. Yeah.
Because, you know, everybody knows, okay, there's Clark, there's Lana, there's, you know, even Pete, right? All these guys are comic book characters. These guys are not chained to any kind of mythology. So they're both wild cards. And there's something that, you know, if everything else, you clear the table. These are two characters that Smallville has introduced into the Superman mythology that will live far beyond just the show.
Yeah.
So
I keep waiting to see Lionel get more integrated into the main superhero or the main Superman story, because he's such a great character.
Right. Well, John Glover is such a big component of that, though, right? So it's like,
he is totally.
You
but
can,
like, I
you
love
can draw a guy with long hair, too. And it's like, but it's not quite the same. It wouldn't be quite the same. Although, Lex's origin, much like Superman's origin, is always kind of in flux. So sometimes you see a Lionel kind of figure, sometimes you don't. But yeah, and next time they reboot Superman, let's get that going. But but Lionel has a very specific. Yeah, I know, right? He has a very specific line of dialogue here, which ties in a little too on the nose, but. whatever, it's Smallville, right? This is what we do. He says, I wonder if Clark would sacrifice his dream of loyalness to you, right? Which is exactly what he doesn't do in this episode. Not that he should, right? I mean, no one is really in the wrong here. It's just lots of feelings are hurt, and it's just an unfortunate reality when you get all these emotions involved. But we cut to the horror movie scene of the episode with Dr. Walden in the back of a ambulance. This is straight out of one of like the Halloween movies, isn't it?
And it's another one of those, like, how's he doing? He'll be out for hours. Instantly wakes up. Wakes up mere seconds after that line is said.
Right. And then they, like we were saying, I assume he just kills everybody in that ambulance with his his hand. And so we know he's back on the loose. And then we get back to the rehearsal dinner speech of Clark at Luther, not Luther Mansion. I'm so used to saying they're always at Luther Mansion. No, kudos for you for not being at the set, guys. He gets up. He has a good speech here, doesn't he?
Yeah, I have the same note. My note is literally, Clark's speech isn't bad. I forgot he's going to be a writer.
That's right. Have you ever been a best man at a wedding or a groomsman?
No. A friend of mine is kind of getting there, and I'm kind of hoping that I'll be... nothing. If his probable future fiance is listening, like, nothing, there's no plans, but like they've just been together long enough, and we're all at that age now, that it's gonna happen soon enough, and I really hope I get to do it, but I'm also scared as hell to actually deal with the responsibility of that. Like, I don't know how to do a bachelor party.
I ask because there's no responsibility here, Matt. You just use this speech from Clark. I mean, that's what I'm
right, good
do.
Point.
I mean, I've been an usher at weddings, you know. I have not been a groomsman or a best man yet, but you know, I will be at some point. I have faith, Lance. I have faith.
Lance is gonna get married at one point.
Come on, Lance. I gotta use all these lines, man. You gotta do me a solid. I would totally use this speech. No one would know, and Lance would know it'd be funny, you know. No,
just like cut the part where you like emotionally hijack it for your own needs, you know.
That is a great point, because that is, it's like, yeah, this is true, but he's not talking to Lex and Helen here. He's talking to Lana.
Yeah, it's, and like he does it well. Again, it's like one of those, like, oh, look at you, you are gonna be a writer, great, you know.
That's so good. Emotionally hijacked for his own needs. That's so true.
Here was the scene, by the way, where I'm like, oh yeah, they're 16, because Clark toasts with a glass of water.
Oh,
it was just
okay.
So strange to look at grown-ass Tom Welling holding water in his hand because he's underage.
That's,
you know?
Really, that's really strict. Even, like, you know, at special occasions like that, they usually let, like, teenagers have a glass of champagne. Come on.
I'm sure someone would have written in, but no one would have cared if Clark had a glass of champagne for his best man.
I can't remember in season 5 when he goes and visits colleges. Like, doesn't he drink a beer? I think.
Probably, yeah.
Come on, where are your standards there, WB? But anyway, and then Clark, you know, Clark has his, the key calls out to him, right? The calling of the
calling
episode.
Happens.
And, you know, he has the classic, you know, headache, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I have to go. And he runs out, very Clark Kent-esque, and goes to the barn, looking around for the key, can't find it. And then Dr. Walden finds it, and he dramatically comes around the corner. He's like, looking for this, or whatever. How often does that happen on this show, I swear?
Oh, I mean, I don't know about you, but that's most of my life. It's a daily occurrence. We're just... People will pop up in my apartment, and I'll be like, what the hell are you doing here?
It's like, did he hear him coming? He's like, oh, I'm going to wait for the right moment, you know?
Yeah, right. By the way, Superman. Like, you didn't...
X-ray the joint, you know, mind your surroundings. Yeah. I'm not really familiar with the geography of the Kent barn, but what wall is that?
I was looking at that. That's not a wall. Think back to the pilot when he puts his hand in the, like, thrasher or whatever, and it doesn't mess him up. That's just the in-between between, like, the barn and, like, where they keep the livestock on the real location. I think they just built that wall and threw him through it.
Oh, I got you. Oh, you're right. Okay. Yeah, I see your point, because they're like, okay.
I can only explain this to you, because, like, only you and this audience would understand what I'm talking about. But, yeah.
I get it. I'm sure they want to, like, they wanted him to fly through something. And they're like, well, we can't blow up the actual barn, so let's build this fake wall. Yeah.
Because famously, those people weren't really crazy about this to begin with. Like, they took the money and all that, but they weren't really happy with it being the Smallville house, and the idea that they would blow a hole in the side of these people's barn. I was just like, oh God, like, I hope you paid them a lot.
Well, Rob LaBelle, who plays Dr. Walden, he had this to say about Dr. Walden appearing kind of over the top in this episode. He says, yes, the guy's crazy a little bit, and he's been in the hospital in a catatonic state. He comes out, He's got a heat beam coming out of his hand, but he's not a bad guy. He may come across as evil, but he's not. He's read the hieroglyphs, which say that this guy will come and take over the world. Walden is trying to save the world, save humankind, by battling the superhuman alien creature. It's an absurd situation, but as an actor, you've got to balance it. And I think he does. You know, I love Dr. Walden. He's one of my favorite supporting characters in Smallville, for real.
Me too. And he's completely right. Like, morally, Dr. Walden thinks he's doing the right thing here.
And it's not a very long fight, because they didn't... I do appreciate that they didn't give him superpowers or anything, you know, as they do with pretty much every character moving forward. If you ever get, like, possessed or anything, it's like, oh, he's got superpowers, you know.
Instantly, you can fight Superman.
Right. Then. So he has his heat beam out of his hand, and that's it. You know, that's all he has. And he's shooting into Clark, and he's levitating with it. I doubt the physics of that, but whatever. And, you know, Clark uses his super speed and runs behind. I don't know if this was intentional, but he runs behind, I guess, the gasoline canister or something.
Right.
And Dr. Walden's following with his hand, and then it hits it and he blows up. Now, Dr. Walden, he's pretty far away from it when he blows up, but he gets about fourth degree burns. He turns into a literal, like, just charred corpse after this explosion.
As if, like, the Mars Attacks Martians came down and, like, turned his skeleton green. Like, it's bad.
Oh man, it's so true. And then you just see, like, this hand sticking up, and it's a disgusting mental image, but
it really is. And then, like, Clark's line later, I had to pry it out of his hand. It's like, that's gross,
but which comes into play at the very end with Lionel. But anyway, we go to commercial, we come back, Lex and Helen are talking about the rehearsal dinner and about how, outside of Clark's migraine, that everything went well. Now, in the companion...
I just love that they reference the migraine at all. So yeah. It's just like you're drinking again, with your
he's,
lady,
he's
you're
still
get
talking
married.
About. He's still talking about Clark.
Gives a damn.
What is it with you and this kid, Lex? There is a bit of trivia in the companion. This is a Craig Byrne question. I'll have to ask him. These scenes aren't on the DVD, but apparently scenes were filmed featuring Lionel Luther interrupting the wedding rehearsal dinner to make wild allegations regarding the paternity of Martha's baby. So... I don't know, like, what would he say? Like, it's Lex's baby? It's his baby? Like, what would his baby.
That's so scandalous. I'm glad they cut that.
Yeah, that's so odd. I know Craig has mentioned, like, they were talking about that. Like, oh, maybe we'll say it's Lionel's baby or something. No, you don't do that to the kids. You don't do that to the kids. So maybe that's why they thought it was so, like, off course. They decided just to, like, not even include it on the DVDs.
Yeah, I'm so glad that never actually became a thing. I also completely forgot about this pregnancy until I rewatched this episode.
You mentioned Tom Welling drinking water. Was Martha drinking water?
Good question.
I always think of, whenever I think of that now, I think about The Office with the Jim and Pam's wedding. He's everyone raise your glass, except Pam, of course.
Except Pam, of course.
Like, ooh. Way to go, Jim. Anyway, we're having a, you know, it's Lies and Secrets-a-thon here on Smallville because...
usually is.
Usually is, that's true. Helen and Lex are talking about everything, and he's like, hey, is everything cool? She's like, yeah. He's like, well, is it? You're the one that's always telling me we need to be honest with each other. So he kind of throws that back at him. But it kind of backfires because she's like, hey, I was going through your stuff, which is always like a... It's hard to have that conversation when it's like, look, I was snooping around in your stuff, and I found out you were snooping around in my stuff, so I have a serious problem with that. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a double standard, is it not?
No, absolutely. But that's the Smallville way of life. It's just lie to your friend until you have nothing else to talk about.
But Lex, he keeps spinning it. He's like, she's like, where'd you get this file? He's like, I was concerned about the kids. I got it from a CDC officer. He's like, that means you bribed him for it. And she really takes the moral high ground here, which again...
Yeah, she does.
If she really does, you know, if she really is who she turns out to be later, like, this doesn't track at all, but be that as it may.
Yeah, you're right. This is not a gold digger. This way, everything she's presenting to us is not... like that kind of mentality.
So she was all in, apparently.
Yeah.
In that acting job. But she walks out, and you wonder, like, you feel bad for Lex, because you feel like, man, he's just getting the short end of the stick here, you know? He's trying to be honest with her, and she's not buying it, and she walks out. He's like, well, if you really, truly feel this way about me, perhaps you shouldn't be marrying me at all. Which, you know, kind of ties back to what the scene that we kind of referenced with Jonathan and Helen, where he's like, I hope you know who you're marrying. Right. It's like, you agreed to be this guy's stand-in father, and you're acting like he's the devil. So she leaves.
But then, and Lex does this, like, show and tell for the audience and proves that we're all right. Yeah.
So, again, this should be in your Clark Kent room, right? He goes over to the bookshelf. I guess he hits a secret lever or something. Opens up a shelf. You know, I wonder what else is in there. There were some other things in there. I wonder what else is in there.
There were, yeah.
And he opens a box. He pulls out a container. He opens that container. He takes a vial. It's like a four-step show and tell. I did appreciate he at least kind of looked over his shoulder before he did it, right?
Yeah, you're right. Like, but just like one of those, Like, he forgot the direction until, like, too late in the game, and he went, oh, yeah, let's do this real quick.
And it's, yeah, he's got the blood. How he knew to get that, it's a mystery. But I found
also,
it very
intriguing. Also, it's in a
intriguing.
Wood box. There's, like, no electronics, but it's still got, like, the dry ice of being cryo-frozen coming out of it. Like, does he have to now refreeze it and put it back together? Like,
yeah, it's like, okay, it was
like a lot of work.
Was it really worth that little glance, Lex? I mean, you have to go back to stage one. But it's interesting that he got it. I think that this is very Lex Luthor, right?
Yes, absolutely.
You see that him stepping towards the iconic comic book Lex here, and this is a great moment, a great little subplot, because you're like, oh wow, he has the blood, what does it mean, what's he gonna do with it, right?
And even the great thing is, it doesn't mean anything yet. He doesn't know what it is, but right. The fact that he has it and he knows it's important is what makes him Lex Luthor.
Well, the last episode we talked about cloning. They use kryptonite to clone people.
Right.
And now we have Clark's blood. I'm like, oh, they're, and again, talking about the chatter on the internet back, I'm like, oh, it's going to be Bizarro coming up. Like, they're gonna use the blood and clone it, but because they use kryptonite to clone it, it's going to get messed up, and that's why it's going to be Bizarro. I'm like, oh, that's so genius.
Well, wait a couple seasons. You'd be surprised.
Yeah, well, but they don't even do that, though. Bizarro just happens to be a Phantom Zone escapee who copies Clark.
Oh, God, that's right.
It's like you do all this setup with cloning and all this stuff, and then you do Bizarro, a completely different approach. That's another question I would ask Alan Miles. Like, hey, what's the deal with Bizarro? So, you know, we get the scene with Clark talking to his parents about how he had to pry the disc out of Walden's hand. And they're like, oh, it's okay, son. It wasn't your fault. Even the sheriff said so. It's like, okay, so we're covered by the law. Like, they just throw that in there. Quick little scene, but you know, a good moment of reflection, considering Clark just saw some guy that, I mean, he wasn't his friend, as he said, but he knew him, and he was a colleague, and he just burned him to death.
By the way, and then, like, at home, you know, like, he couldn't go home and, like, relax. Like, the field's still on fire.
That's true. It's like, and by the way, Clark, that's going to be really expensive, so watch where you shoot that heat vision next time. Yeah. So then we cut to Lionel in a morgue. It's a very X-Files kind of scene.
Love this scene.
And it's Dr. Walden's, you know, corpse, and the Undertaker there, right? Is that Undertaker like a funeral home person? I don't know. The autopsy.
Undertaker's funeral. Yeah, she's a medical examiner.
Yeah,
probably.
So she's telling Lionel, like, well, I've never seen anything like this. His skin was completely burned, except for this one spot on his hand. And she shows us his hand, and it's the octagonal outline. And it's just his skin. It's disgusting, but we see the symbols in it, you know?
Yeah.
And Lionel just turns to her. He says, send it to me. She's like, send you what?
Send you what?
And he's like, the hand. Like, she's an idiot for even asking.
I love that. First of all, this day player, this actress, is really good in this scene.
I thought so as well.
Really enjoying it. And, like, I believe that she's a medical person who's like, this shit is crazy. Let me show you this. And then, like, that's that end tag for that scene. Like, as a kid, I remember getting chills. Like, oh, we're going somewhere.
What's he going to do with it, right?
Yep.
Oh, so then we get our last scene here with Clark and Lana. And she has come to the loft to kind of check in on him.
Looking so beautiful, you want to cry.
Yeah, she's got a little scarf there with her, yep. You know, and he's already changed out of his attire, so he's just wearing his normal flannel. So they're not quite the best match right now. It's a good scene between them here, huh?
Yeah, and it also, like, the music here is really good. Like, it feels vaguely familiar to me, but I just liked the song choice.
Uh-huh.
Like I said, she looks crazy, crazy beautiful. Tom Welling is the luckiest man on television. Like,
this is Chantel. I can't pronounce stuff, guys. You know it by now, but it's Chantel Krevizuk. In This
sure.
Life is the song.
Okay,
so that's the song. Well, you'll hear it to play us out in this episode. So
yeah, not one that made it to the Talon mix.
The Talon mix. They need to be like 12 Talon mixes. They could have made so much money off
no
off me.
Kidding.
You know, I would have bought every
yeah,
single
really.
One.
It would have
anyway.
Been like, yeah, it would have been like the Now CDs. Yeah, you're right.
But they pretty much decide they're gonna go for it here, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Everyone's all in, and even, you know, Chloe gets hurt, so, like, we know it's real.
Yeah, exactly. So again, Chloe picked the worst possible time to come over. And usually on Smallville, I would be like, why is she even here? That's stupid. But no, Lionel just tried to bribe her to investigate Clark and his family. Right?
Yeah, she's like, makes total sense.
I better go tell Clark, you know, because in Smallville there are no cell phones, right? Even though we see them all the time, I guess. But that is something you kind of need to tell someone in person. Right.
Yeah.
It's like,
we here in Smallville, we drive across town if we have something to say to someone.
In the defense of the show, I will say this was pre-texting. You know,
yes.
There was no text, so I mean that texting had just made communication so it's been a great and terrible thing at the same time.
I agree. But, it's like, it's so much more obvious now on Flash. It's like, you came all the way to the police station to say, like, just text the guy.
Metahuman alert.
Yeah, exactly. Done. Look.
So, yeah, but as we said, Chloe, we see Clark and Lana kiss, and you're all caught up in the moment. You're like, oh, all right, good for them. And then we slowly zoom out, and we see this out of focus, like, yellow blob, and then it comes into focus, like, oh, no, it's Chloe, and she saw it, and, oh, they've been lying to her this whole time. That's what makes it worse. It's not the fact that they're, you know, Clark and Lana finally got together. It's the fact that they were just lying to Chloe about it. She's like, hey, guys, I'm a big girl. You can tell me. And they're like, no, we're good. We're just doing wedding invitations. Yeah. It's like, come on, right?
Plus, you call her an out-of-focus orange blob. Like, that's going to hurt her feelings, too, man.
But then she cries and runs off, and poor Chloe, right? This is the these are Chloe's darkest hours here at the end of
season two. This is the low point.
But it's a very sweet ending to Clark and Lana's scene here. Like, they don't like say anything; they just kind of caress each other and look into each other's eyes. It's like, so like, oh, this is like when you first start falling in love. It's just so
cute. You're just standing in a bar and looking beautiful at each other. Yeah. It's great.
And you know, and this is like Clark's been saying; he's one of them since he's 5 years old. So good on you, buddy. So. In an ordinary episode of Smallville, that would be the end. But this is not an ordinary episode of Smallville. It's a two-part season finale. So Clark's just in the barn. He's just soaking it all in. He's like, yeah, man, the life is good, right? But then we hear, like, Kal-El, it is time. And it's Terrence Stamp again. It's Jor-El. We know it's Jor-El. I mean, Clark doesn't know what this is. But he walks over to the Storm Cellar, and it's like the classic, like, sci-fi. It's like Close Encounters of the Third Kind or something, right? This light behind the door, it's just like pulsating, and you keep hearing, like, Kal-El, it is time. And you hear the Krypton music. They bring back the John Williams score, Mark Snow's reorchestration.
Sneaks in there. It's beautiful.
And then, you know, he goes down there, and it's boom, to be continued. Which, by the way, as I pointed out on our Twitter, I guess they lost the title card for to be continued, because I was like, this font looks weird. I went back and I looked at Tempest, the season one finale. Yeah, just go on our Twitter. You'll see.
I'm just going to scroll ahead to the end here. I've got it on right in front of me. Keep going. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Smallville has a font, like the same font, like executive producers and all that. This is not in that font. This is like, it's like an Arial or something. It's like, oh, God, we forgot it to be continued. It's like some intern had to do it and didn't know what the font was, and they just threw it up there at the last minute.
You're totally right. They put it in when they were editing as like a temp, like, we'll fix it later, and nobody remembered.
Nobody fixed it. And they didn't even fix it for the home video release. Anyway, guys, out of further curiosity, I looked at Exodus. There is no To Be Continued on the next episode. So, very interesting.
Oh, okay.
Because it wasn't like, Smallville started to do these whole, like, 3 month later things.
Right.
So, it wasn't quite the same as, like, you know, Tempest was like, okay, we have to pick up right where this left off. But this, or not this one, but Exodus, it's like, oh, that we're going to come back months later. But anyway, this is directly leads into the next episode, Exodus. And Clark goes down in there to presumably meet his Kryptonian father. But we'll find out about that.
Yeah. I can't wait to listen to the next episode and see what happens.
First thing we find, kryptonite. Now the caves. What does Luther want, anyway?
I don't know, but I think we have a bigger problem. Dr. Walden can read the Krypton language. He wrote it on the ceiling at the hospital.
Do you think he's figured out your secret?
Is that why you're so worried right now?
I'm not sure, but there's something else going on in that cave. The symbols have changed.
What does it say now, son?
The day is coming when the last son will begin his quest to rule the third planet.
Clark,
don't you see? I'm the last son.
Colin got an 8.7. out of 10 on IMDb, and the Superman homepage gives it 5 out of 5, which finally, me and Neil Bailey are finally in alignment again. He put some pretty low scores in the last couple episodes. Like, oh, come on, Neil, it's good stuff. But anyway, this is just a great episode, Matt.
Yes.
On the letter scale, what would you give it? You know, from A plus to F, where would you give it?
Honestly, A plus. Like, it's, you know, there's still some Smallville not making sense of things in the middle of this episode, but that's to be expected. It does so much well that there's no point in, despite the fact we just nitpicked it for an hour and a half, like there's nothing to hold against it in a serious way. I think it's a great episode.
Absolutely. Like we've been saying this whole time, like there are little nitpicks throughout, but the episode is so good. It just carries you through. So I'm right there. I'm going to give it an A+, which is a rare. I really give episodes A+. It's only the third A+ I've given so far.
Also, like you just agreed with a guest. Does that happen a lot?
Sometimes when it's like, I give it a B. Yeah, me too. Sometimes, but we have synergy on the scores as well. So I'm A glad. Plus for you, A plus for me. So then our tally board is our last order of business here, Matt. We have a plus one for our blue shirt, red jacket. That brings us to 10 so far. That number will skyrocket. we've been slowly, adding up the tally, but we're at 10 so far. We have a plus one for episode title said in episode in the most random way.
Yep.
But there it was. So.
But you're right. You're right.
He said it. So that's 16 now for that. And we have a plus one for hospital visit. Dr. Walden was getting his CAT scan there. And we're at 28 now. 28 hospital visits through two seasons of television. And then spoiler, we have another hospital visit next time. So we're going to have 29 through two seasons.
To deal with the baby and all that too, right?
Oh my God, the baby. Yeah, exactly.
Another baby.
and then the Bechdel test there, Matt. It was a fail, right? I mean.
You see, I love that you do this. I never think to watch for it when I was doing it. So you'll have to tell me. But yeah, I can't remember anything.
Yeah, I mean, every conversation with Chloe and Lana devolved into Clark. And then, of course, right. Helen and Lana was talking about Clark and Lex. So,
yep.
There it was. So that's a fact. And again, it's not a signifier of quality. It's just I find it an interesting just, sub note to make. All right, Matt. Well, fun as always, man. If people want to find you out there on the internet and to hear all your opinions on all sorts of things, where can they find you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on Twitter, and there's always Lois and Clark, the new podcast of Superman, which we have not gotten back to.
Yeah, the old podcast of Superman at the moment.
Yeah, really,
right?
The old new podcast of Superman. We apologize. There will be plans. It's just, life, whatever.
Life, man. Hashtag life. I got it. I mean, yeah. And exactly. I bought season 2 on DVD to appear.
I know. And that's part of that is like, no, we have to do it.
My $10 will be avenged.
Yeah. Zach has to get on. So it will happen. I don't, whatever. But anyway, we did a really good first season, or one that I'm proud of.
I really recommend it. It's really fun listening, guys. Even if you haven't seen Lois and Clark, if you have any kind of familiarity with it, because I know Lois and Clark is not the most accessible show. It's only on DVD. It's not streaming anywhere. Maybe this new DC streaming service, which had Teen Titans on it, Young Justice season 3. Maybe they'll put Lois and Clark on there. That would light some fire under you guys to get back
fine.
To work. So
put it all on. Put the Shazam, put the ISIS show on. Just do.
Oh no, not the ISIS show. No.
I've never seen it. I don't know.
Well, ISIS is a little,
Oh right.
Doesn't mean what it used to mean. It's
no, I know.
There's an episode of Smallville called ISIS, by the way.
I know.
And Lana started the ISIS Foundation, so lots of ISIS connections.
Look for me there. Also, I always like followers on Instagram, so it's Matt Truex was taken on Instagram, and that's me.
Was Matt Truex really taken?
It was, yes. So I just added a few words, and we're all set.
Awesome. Well, as for me personally, you can find me on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoreonZach. I'm also the host of another podcast, Standard Orbit, at the Trek FM Network, where we talk about the old and new adventures of Captain Kirk and the Enterprise, old Star Trek movies, new Star Trek movies, original Star Trek series. We talk about it all there, so you can find us on Twitter at Trek FM and also on Facebook at Trek FM. And as for this podcast, we're on Twitter at AlwaysMallville with one S. You can find us on Facebook at AlwaysHoldOnToSmallville and send us an email at AlwaysMallville@gmail.com. Once again, that's with one S. All right, Matt. Well, that's been fun, man. We'll look forward to having you back on next season in season 3.
Yeah, and thank you. Like I requested this episode. Thank you for having me.
All the good episodes. I'm gonna have to find a bad episode for you. We can.
Oh, fine. Oh my God. Oh, I'll do Thirst or Spell in a heartbeat.
Oh
absolutely.
Yes. I think Thirst. Craig is already called Thirst.
Of course he did.
And Spell. I got some people that have some feelers out for Spell because they want to defend it. So I'd be very interested.
How about this? I know you're getting a lot of requests from guests for the big episodes or whatever. I leave this to you. Give me whatever filler bad episode in season 3, and I'll come on and we'll talk about it. It'll be fun.
We'll get you on for a couple. Okay. It'll be fun. All right, guys. Well, we're going to be back next week talking about Exodus, the season 2 finale. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. Let me tell you.
a star. Well, I can reach up and bring you back down onto the ground and give you everything you dream about. Or you can run from it and you can hide from me, but I am right beside you in this life.